Good morning, my Vox family. It's good to be with you on this cozy December morning. My name is Nick Acosta, for those of you who don't know me. Advent is actually my favorite time of year at Vox, so I'm really especially missing y'all this morning. Little caveat before I jump in, my internet is not super great this morning, so if it gets a little shaky, I might have to just go to straight audio. Okay, so... When was the last time you felt comfort, like deep comfort, the kind of comfort that goes to your bones? For me, it was about a month ago at the end of a camping trip that I had with three of my brothers and my dad. We were at Davis Mountain State Park. We try to go camping every couple of years or so. I can't really say we were roughing it because my brother Silas had a camper. There were showers and power and water and stuff. But, you know, I'm kind of by nature what you'd call like an indoor kid. So still definitely out of my comfort zone. The days were perfect. It was like 70 degrees and sunny. But the nights were rough. It was in the 30s. Pro tip, the sleeping bag says that it's rated for 19 degrees. It does not mean you will be comfortable up until that temperature. It just means you won't die. Like, you won't wake up having lost a foot to frostbite, but does not mean you're going to sleep comfortably that night. So because in my family, we're a lot of like, you know, indoor kid types, and we're not as young as we used to be. The way we do our camping trips is we actually camp for 2 days and then we go to an Airbnb for like 1 or 2 more days. And we're not like miserable. When we walked into that Airbnb house in Alpine, that feeling of comfort, like I can exhale. And what was interesting was noticing how for everybody kind of registered that comfort a little bit differently. Like what did it for them to make them comfortable? For some people, it was being able to sit down on a couch for the first time in 2 days, like just finally like sink into a couch and relax. Like I'm finally comfortable. For others, it was being able to like get on their phone and just mindlessly browse the internet or Twitter or whatever, because finally there was good Wi-Fi. That was partly me. It's actually kind of funny, actually, because like, you know, thinking like you've been disconnected from the world in this pristine environment for 2 days. And then your idea of relaxing is like, yes, time to finally get angry online again. But it's still, you know, it's like it's still you're giving it some pleasure, however momentary, like, this is comfort. But for me, this is a little unexpected, but for me, what did it was like, I changed out of my dusty camping clothes, took a shower, put on some comfy clothes, and I walk around the house in my socks. And I realized then that's when the comfort really like got down to my bones. And I realized, oh, like I've been wearing shoes for 2 days. Like, you know, I can't even like get up and go to the bathroom in the morning without putting shoes on. And now I get to like walk around in the house, like in my socks, like feel my feet against a clean floor. Like that's what really clicked me into like deep relaxation mode, like comfort. As we enter this second Sunday of Advent, this passage that we have today in our lectionary is about this kind of comfort, the kind of comfort that goes deep down. And I think it's important to maybe filter out some negative connotations that we have around the word comfort. One of those, I actually used it already a few minutes ago, is the phrase comfort zone, right? Like, which is usually not something, we don't think of something as something constructive. A comfort zone is a place where we might go to like avoid challenges or shelter ourselves from unpleasant things. And then there's a phrase creature comforts, which usually means, you know, like a luxury vehicle or a five-star hotel or something. We usually associate the idea of creature comforts with consumerism. So I think we're right not to take these kinds of comfort uncritically, but I don't think this is what we're talking about here in this passage of Isaiah. This is about a good, deep comfort, a comfort we experience through finding our place in God. So what's happening in this passage is Judah has been defeated by the Empire of Babylon, this ruthless ancient empire. And Babylon's way of crippling the kingdom of Judah was, one, destroy their temple, their most sacred place, and two, pick a big number of Judeans and exile them out of their own kingdom, take them back to Babylon in captivity. And this is a huge chapter in Jewish history. It's called the Exile. And this is also the beginning of the Jewish diaspora, which is part of the Jewish experience right up until today. So this period is about 60 years of Jews being forced to live in Babylon, the heart of this evil empire. Then, as happens with empires, Babylon is defeated by a new empire, this new up and coming empire of Persia. And the Persians, a lot of people consider them, when you compare them to other empires at the time, actually kind of a benign empire. They wanted cooperation from their subject kingdoms. They wanted their respect. So they didn't do a lot of the cruel stuff that you hear about other empires like Babylon doing. So Persia decides, okay, so we have all these Judeans in Babylon. This exile is inhumane. It's unnecessary. So we're going to let the people of Judah go back to their home. But, and this is the key, they can't actually get home yet because, like, it's a lot of work to move a whole kingdom of people back to their land. So it's a pretty long time before they actually do get to go back. And this passage this morning is written for these people in this in-between period. And so in some interesting ways, this Advent passage this morning has some parallels to where we are today, right? We're finally at the point in this pandemic where we're starting to see some promising news about vaccines being available in the near future. So we're starting to see some light come up on the horizon, aren't we? But we're still in the thick of this pandemic. We're still in this moment where it's like the worst it's ever been. So we're in a similar like spiritual place as these ancient Judeans. We're in exile from our sense of normalcy. We're in exile from our families, exile from our community. Right now, we're in exile from each other, right? Having to share liturgy through our TVs and screens. But we still have a hope, the hope of a return to comfort, like in the foreseeable future. So here's this passage again, where God promises his people comfort. It says, "Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term, that her penalty is paid, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins." So this is a people who've lived in deep, deep shame for generations. The whole point of the exile was, besides like crippling the power of Judah from being able to like rise up against them, besides that, it was to humiliate the people of Judah. And it worked. Like, the overriding experience of the exile was, we've lost our glory. We've lost our favor from the Lord. We thought we were this chosen people, but now we're broken. God's turned away from us and we're paying the price of our sins. But in this passage, God is saying, no, this isn't what I want for you. The price has been paid. There's nothing more that I want from you. Be freed from your shame. There's nothing I want for you, only the blessing of comfort. Be comforted. So I've been thinking, why is comfort a blessing? Like, what is it about it? Is it like that it feels good? That it's a physically and mentally pleasant sensation? Like, our stress levels and our cortisol levels and our brain are lowered and we enjoy that feeling. Like, we know it's a healthy thing. We know anxiety is like not good for us, right? Or maybe is it that comfort a lot of times is a privilege? Not everybody gets to feel comfort. And so when we experience comfort, we feel special. Is it that? Is it that we feel esteemed? I've been thinking about this, and I don't know if either of those is it. I wonder if maybe the reason comfort is a blessing, the reason God desires us to be comforted in the midst of our shame, is that what true deep comfort gives us is freedom from self-consciousness, the freedom to just be. Think about it. So think about someone's home you've been to, maybe the home of someone you haven't seen since the before times. We all have that friend or family member who their house is our favorite place to visit, because when we're there, we feel the most amount of comfort when we're there. like the kind of host that they might not be the most impressive with home decor or like their Michelin level cooking or something, but it's the kind of host that when you're in their home, you feel like you can show up in sweats and it's cool because maybe they're also in sweats. You feel comfortable enough in their home. You can just walk into the kitchen, start snooping around the fridge for a drink. Maybe plop yourself down on the couch with them, help yourself to a blanket, maybe prop your feet up on the coffee table, you know, whatever it takes to just really like be yourself in their home. It makes me think of the saying in Spanish, mi casa es tu casa, which suggests like being really comfortable in someone else's home means being like feeling free from being self-conscious, like just like you would be at your own house. That kind of comfort, that freedom from self-consciousness. Like I'm not second guessing myself. I'm not wondering if I've done enough as a guest. Like I'm just present. I'm comfortable in my own skin. The writer Annie Dillard has a short essay called Living Like Weasels, where she talks about walking through the woods in Virginia, and she comes across a weasel. And the way she describes it, she and the weasel, they seem to have like surprised each other, and they both stand there with their eyes locked for what she says felt like a minute. And then suddenly the weasel runs away. But she said while she was staring at this weasel, she was fixated on this idea of how the weasel experiences life totally differently from her, that there's like an immediacy to the weasel's experience that she found herself like envying, because the weasel doesn't live with self-consciousness. Weasel doesn't live with doubt, doesn't live with angst or purposelessness. The weasel just lives. Annie Dillard says, I would like to live as I should, as the weasel lives as he should. And I suspect that for me, the way is like the weasel's, open to time and death painlessly, noticing everything, remembering nothing, choosing the given with a fierce and pointed will. She goes on, we could live under the wild rose as weasels, mute and uncomprehending. I could very calmly go wild. I could live 2 days in the den, curled, leaning on mouse fur, sniffing bird bones, blinking, licking, breathing musk, my hair tangled in the roots of grasses. Down is a good place to go where the mind is single. Down is out of your ever-loving mind and back to your careless senses. I remember muteness as a prolonged and giddy fast, where every moment is a feast of utterance received. Sorry, I really like that turn of phrase, a feast of utterance received. Time and events are merely poured, unremarked, and ingested directly, like blood pulsed into my gut through a jugular vein. Could two live that way? Could two live under the wild rose and explore by the pond so that the smooth mind of each is as everywhere present to the other and as received and as unchallenged as falling snow? When I read this about Annie Dillard wishing she could live life like a weasel, what she's wishing for seems to me is the comfort of being able to live free of self-consciousness. It actually reminds me of like Adam and Eve in the garden. As soon as shame entered the garden, all of a sudden they were aware of their nakedness and decided to clothe themselves. And now like suddenly they're self-conscious and they've lost the freedom to live in the comfort of their own bodies. So for us today, I wonder, what are some ways that our self-consciousness, our shame, or any other attribute that we have that weasels don't? What are some of the ways that these things prevent us from being able to live in the deep comfort of our true selves? What would it look like for us to live a life of deep comfort? Like our lives are God's home, and we're free to walk into the kitchen and pour ourselves a drink, put our feet on the coffee table, free from self-consciousness. What would it be like to live that way? So maybe as a practice this Advent season, we could try to notice our own relationship with this idea of comfort. On one hand, what is comforting God like? And as we notice these things, what's keeping me from this? The text goes on. After saying that God wishes for Jerusalem to be comforted, the text says, "Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term, that her penalty is paid." So God is saying, you don't have to do anything else. You don't owe anything more. You're all paid up. We're good. Just, you can just come. Come and be comfortable. Come and be comforted. I'm reminded of a song, a hymn written by the great secular prophet Tom Waits called "Come On Up to the House." I mean, Tom Waits, he says it's not a hymn, but it's really hard not to hear it as a hymn. So it's like a hymn to me. In this song, Tom Waits sings, "Well, the moon is broken and the sky is cracked. Come on up to the house. The only things that you see is all that you lack. Come on up to the house. All your crying don't do no good. Come on up to the house. Come down off the cross. We can use the wood. You got to come on up to the house." I thought about playing the song for you, but as much as I like Tom Waits, I'm aware enough to know that, like, I understand that his sound doesn't really do it for a lot of people. If you've never heard Tom Waits, he sings like his vocal cords have been soaking in cigarette tar and gasoline for like 30 years. I get that his sound isn't the kind of sound that's going to like take most people to a spiritual place. So even better, Harmon has agreed to play this song himself for our liturgy later on this morning. So we're all going to sing it together, led by the songbird of Vox himself. By the way, that is not Harmon's nickname, but I'm trying to make it his nickname. So I love that line, especially, "Come down off the cross. We can use the wood." It sounds a lot like you've served your term. Your penalty is paid. Come on up to the house. And what's interesting about this idea of climbing down off the cross is you have to come to terms with the fact that you can't earn your way back into the house of God. That's the invitation to comfort in God. You don't have to get ready for it. It's there for you. It's already yours. You already have a seat on the couch. That friend's house where you feel the most comfortable, you don't have to put on any certain clothes. You don't have to bring anything. You just come on in. You think you have to sacrifice and suffer and prove your worth to make up for your shortcomings, but there's nothing you can do to earn your place. Just come on up to the house. Kick your shoes off. Walk around in your socks. Sink down into the couch. Make the house of the Lord your home. So, Vox, as we're invited into the deep comfort in God, may we be free of our shame. May we be free of the yoke of sacrifice and self-consciousness. May we find the freedom of comfort in God, freedom to be simply as we are. May the comfort of the Father, the love of the Son, and the solidarity of the Holy Spirit be with you this week.